Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog. This is Preview Spotlight number 84 for the October 2014 previews. In this episode, we'll be going over some of the items and previews you might find interesting, and the way we determine interesting is by people sending in clips, people like you. So that's right, this is a very democratic kind of an episode. We have an open submission policy. Everyone is encouraged to send in clips each and every month, because really that's what makes these episodes work. I could go on and on about the comics I like, but I want to hear what you guys like too, because that expands my reading list and therefore what gets covered on the podcast. There are thousands of items and previews each and every month. It's easy for things to get lost in the shuffle and fly under your radar. I've had this happen to me a lot, and I've been going through previews cover to cover for ages. As always, we're going to be starting at the beginning of previews, working our way towards the back. Obviously, we're not going to go item by item or page by page or even publisher by publisher. We're just going to hit the highlights, and again, the highlights are picked by listeners and so if there's something in next month's previews that you think, wow, more people ought to know about, send in a clip. That's how people find out about these things. So, with that, let's start listening to some clips.
This is Derek from the Comics Alternative Podcast. I haven't been sending in clips for the past couple of months, and I've missed doing so. But I want to for this October, so let's get right to it. My first pick of the month is in the Dark Horse section of the catalog. You'll find it on page 45. John Mueller's Oink, Heaven's Butcher. Now, there's a brief solicit in the catalog, but I'm going to read what you can find on Amazon.com because it's quite a bit more descriptive. Oink, Heaven's Butcher, is somehow both a sick continuation of the Orwellian fantasy and an inversion of Planet of the Apes, except with pigs. How so? In a dark, oppressive future society where concepts such as day and mouth have been long forgotten, the church-turned-state has decided to secretly breed humans with pigs to form a slave society. When one of the pig slaves realizes that the dogma being forced on them is all lies, he undertakes a path of revenge and revelation. Okay, so this definitely has my attention. This originally was released, I think, in serial form in the mid-90s through Kitchen Sink Press, and then Kitchen Sink put out a trade collection of this in 1996. I'm not unfamiliar with it. I've never seen it. It just looks intriguing. And also, according to this description, it reminds me a little bit of that episode from Seinfeld where Kramer sees the pig man. Who knows? There may be some connection there somewhere. I may or may not try my luck with this title. It definitely does sound intriguing. And if you're the kind who likes to be intrigued when it comes to your new comic titles, then check out page 45 of the October Previews catalog, and there you'll find Oink, Heaven's Butcher, written and drawn by John Mueller.
Hey guys, this is Drew with a pick from Dark Horse on page 52. It's The Massive, number 30. This is the final issue of The Massive, a comic that I have been touting off and on since I started doing these clips. And sadly, it is coming to an end. It is written by Brian Wood, art by Gary Brown, cover and colors by Jordy Belair. This is on page 52 of the Dark Horse section of previews. In addition to this being the final issue, they are offering a lot of the trade. Looks like all of the trades again. This is a fantastic eco-mystery thriller, ecological thriller. It's really great. It's been so much fun, and I'm sad to see it end, but please check this out. If you're not going to hop in on issue 30, at least check out one of the first trades to see if it's for you. They usually collect six issues at a time in those trades, so there's a lot of value for your money. Again, the final issue of The Massive, number 30, by Brian Wood. It's $3.50, 32 pages, and it's on page 52 of the Dark Horse section of previews.
Next up on page 67 is Secret Six number 1 from DC Comics. It's written by Gail Simone with art by Ken Ashley. We get a cover by Dale Eaglesham on the first issue here. And this is an assembly of characters. It looks like we're going to get probably Catman, Black Alice, Talon, and a few others. And the Secret Six has a long history in the DC Universe. It was originally almost a Mission Impossible-style group of adventurers that were led by the mysterious Mockingbird that was kind of just the voice that gave them the missions and stuff. And the mystery was, who was Mockingbird? They've since, in more recent years, brought back the Secret Six as a quasi-team for villains and whatnot that are basically being led on certain missions. And with this one, it's a new take. I think Gail Simone wrote one of the more recent versions of the Secret Six, which had Catman and a few of the other characters in it. So I'm looking forward to this. It should be good. It's nice to see DC bringing back some of the older concepts and names and titles and such. And hopefully this will give them a chance to feature some characters that just haven't gotten a spotlight really in the new 52 much or have lost the spotlight they had. I'm not sure if... I think this is the Talon from Birds of Prey. You know, we'll see what happens. Looks like fun. Obviously, number one should be a good jumping on point. We've got a 50% discount on that through DCBS because it's Comic Book Page Pick of the Month. Once again, that's Secret Six number one from DC Comics on page 76. Next up on page 90 is Justice League 3000 number 12. This is written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis, and it features the return of Blue and Gold. That's right, Beetle and Booster are back. Now, this title is set 1,000 years in the future, in which they are taking people and essentially overriding them with the genetic template and memories, at least as best they have of both, of various Justice Leaguers. So it was only a certain amount of time before they got around to characters like the Ted Kord Blue Beetle and Booster Gold. Now, Beetle and Booster were a hallmark of the Giffen-DeMatteis run of the Justice League. So bringing those characters back, particularly in a book that has this sense of humor and style, should be a lot of fun. It also implies we definitely had the Ted Kord version of Blue Beetle in this universe, or at least in whichever universe is, you know, the Justice League 3000 is set in, which the implication is it's the new 52 universe, but that's not locked down, set in stone, I think. Either way, if you liked that style of humor, the pair-up of Blue Beetle and Booster Gold, which was a classic team-up, this is something well worth checking out. So once again, that's Justice League 3000 number 12 from DC Comics on page 90. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS on it because it's a Comic Book Page Pick of the Month. Check it out.
This is TJ back for another month of previews with my first selection on page 144 of the Vertigo section. This is Scout Deluxe Edition Book 1 hardcover, written by Jason Aaron with art by R.M. Guerra. This is one of the most exciting things in this month's previews for me. I'm a huge Scout fan. Read the whole series. I think it was 60 issues when it was coming out. Basically it was one of the first things I read by Jason Aaron and really turned me on to kind of dig into the Vertigo back catalog. So if you're interested in some really gritty crime stories told on the Indian reservation with some great art and just some great storytelling, then Scalped is what you're looking for. So here's the description. The first 11 issues of the acclaimed series are collected in hardcover for the first time. Dashiell Bad Horse has come home to the reservation armed with a set of nunchucks, a hell-bent for leather attitude, and a dark secret. But nothing has changed except for the glimmering new casino and a once proud people overcome by drugs and organized crime, including sketches and extras. This is kind of one of those series that I think epitomizes what is so great about Vertigo is, or at least what used to be so good about Vertigo. I don't know about now with the new series, but they used to let their creators really play and do exactly what they wanted to. This ran for 60 issues, and in those 60 issues, Jason Aaron did such a good job of developing these characters. They were so flawed, and you got to see how they struggled to get through their lives and how they just struggled to make good decisions. And just, it was just such a great story with a huge, huge beginning, middle, and an end. And was just so satisfying when you finished it. And so if you're interested in a good, complete story, this looks like a great beginning of the hardcover deluxe series. And, you know, I've tried these for the DMZ and a few of the other stuff, The Wide Last Man. And these are really good quality books from DC. So if you're interested in some scalped hardcovers, check out page 144 of the Vertigo section.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. My pick for this month's preview spotlight comes from the DC section on page 124, Sensation Comics featuring Wonder Woman number 5, written by Karina Bechko, and I hope I pronounced her name correctly, and Gabriel Hardman, art by Gabriel Hardman. The solicit reads, Wonder Woman has accepted a covert mission to infiltrate Apocalypse, find a group of Amazons imprisoned there by Darkseid, and bring them home alive. But a battle with the Female Furies almost proves fatal and throws Diane's plans into chaos. What I like about this new Wonder Woman series, it's in the same line of The Legends of the Dark Knight and The Adventures of Superman. It's self-contained stories, you know, that's written by today's, you know, top creative teams. And I'm really excited about this creative team, Karina Bechko and Gabriel Hartman, working on this Wonder Woman issue number 5. You know, I like what they did on the Star Wars Legacy series by Dark Horse last year. You know, that was great. You know, I love Gabriel Hartman's artwork, you know, and I'm really looking forward to see what version of Wonder Woman is he going to use. Is it going to be the pre-52 Wonder Woman, or is it going to be the new 52 Wonder Woman? And I also like to see what his version of Apocalypse, you know, how is he going to draw Apocalypse, his version of Apocalypse. That's what I'm also looking forward to see. And more importantly, you know, how is he going to draw Darkseid? That's going to be pretty cool. I can't wait for that. So if you guys get a chance, pick up Sensation Comics featuring Wonder Woman number 5. You know, I will. I already have it on my pull list at my comic book store, Dragon's Lair's Collectibles and Comics in the Mililani Malka Shopping Center. Thank you for listening. Back to you, John.
This is Kyle and Drew with Comics for Fun and Profit, and we are on page 135 of your previews guide. We're in the Vertigo section, and we're looking at a really neat book called Wolf Moon, number 1. That's by Colin Bunn, who Drew and myself have been following on his Magneto run. He's got art by Jeremy Hahn on this, and a cover by Jai Lee. It's going to be a 6-issue series starting in December. And this looks pretty cool, Drew. What do you think of this?
Hey, man, it's lycanthropy, you know, we're going to have some werewolf stuff going on in here.
Lycanthropy? Lycanthropy is how I always said it, but that's a whole...
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I could be wrong. I could definitely be wrong with that. I've only been mispronouncing it for a few decades, so that's fine.
I think I got that off of Underworld, and Kate Beckinsale has a foreign lisp, so I could be wrong as well.
You know, 6-issue miniseries, you know, you never know. They could be great, could be... not so great, but, you know, 32 pages, $3.99, looks like Colin Bunn, you know, he's really good. I'm Absolutely. Really following it for him more than I am the story, because I really like what he's doing for Magneto, and if he can do that, I think I'll let him have a creator-owned thing and check it out.
Yeah, so it looks cool. It looks like we're going to follow a guy as he chases down the werewolf that killed his family, and it looks like throughout this process, he's going to learn a lot more about what exactly it means to be a werewolf in this I don't know, would you call it a disease of lycanthropy? So I like where they go with some of the, sometimes with these stuff. You know, we get a lot of zombies, a lot of vampires, and werewolves is the other thing in that ilk, but it's not as hot as those. So I think this looks like a lot of fun, and with it being just 6 issues, that's a nice, easy run. And you know Vertigo. Vertigo is going to be a good book. There's going to be a couple shock value things in there, usually around issue 3 or 4. And with it being Colin Bunn, it's well written. And a bonus for me, big fan of Jai Lee's art. I'd be awesome if he was doing all these covers, but at the very least, this cover's awesome on number 1. So I might even pick up an extra on that one.
Yeah, I think it'd be really cool. So we think you should check it out. And check us out at comicsfunprofit.com.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative podcast and blog. My next pick of the month is in the Vertigo section. You'll find it on page 143. It is North 40. This is the trade paperback, a new edition. This came out several years ago through Wildstorm, and it is written by Aaron Williams and art by Fiona Staples. As with my previous recommendation, Oink, I'm not familiar with this. I haven't read it. I didn't see it when it first came out. But it's got Fiona Staples' art. And I'm sure that with all the attention she's getting with Saga, that they wanted to bring this back out into a new edition and introduce it to a new audience. According to the solicit, the residents of an isolated rural area discover superhuman and supernatural power in their mists in this title collecting the hit six-issue miniseries. The power stops at the county line, but inside the afflicted area, something ancient and malevolent stirs as new monsters arise. Can Wyatt, an unlikely hero from the wrong side of the tracks, join forces with Sheriff Morgan and town outcast Amanda to keep the county from imploding or being eaten by the mighty Tulu? Okay, so it has a bit of the Lovecraft in there as well. It sounds interesting, and of course it has Fiona Staples' art. I've mentioned that a couple of times, and you can't go wrong with that. I want to emphasize it again, Fiona Staples' art. So check out the new edition of the trade paperback, North 40, on page 143 of the catalog.
Next up on page 152 and 153 is Star Trek Planet of the Apes number 1 of 5 from IDW. This obviously crosses over Star Trek and the Planet of the Apes. What's cool is it's got kind of the subtitle The Primate Directive, which almost implies we may get future crossovers like this if this one works well, and I'm kind of hoping so because this is just kind of a cool concept. Now, I don't know how they're going to work out the Enterprise getting to Earth and finding it overrun by the Planet of the Apes, because it's got to be a different timeline or something. But either way, this is being done by the writers who did the Star Trek Doctor Who crossover, and frankly, they've got a really good track record just in general with how IDW is handling both the Star Trek stuff and the Planet of the Apes stuff and things like Doctor Who when they had that license. And the crossovers they've been doing have just been a lot of fun. So again, I'm really looking forward to that. Scott Tipton, Dave Tipton, the writers just are really talented and do a great job. We also have, normally I don't mention the variant covers and such, but they've got a subscription variant in partnership with Boom Studios, and it's done by George Perez. So if you've ever wanted to see George Perez doing the bridge crew of Kirk's old school Enterprise, a couple of apes and whatnot from, you know, Planet of the Apes, including, you know, Colonel George Taylor or a Klingon or whatever, that's what they've got on the cover. It looks awesome. Looks like a lot of fun. They've also got a retailer variant by Tone Rodriguez with an ape sitting in Kirk's chair and stuff with the Starfleet, you know, uniform on that looks just great. So, I mean, they've also got, in addition to a really cool concept for a comic, some really cool concepts for the variant covers. So, looking forward to this miniseries coming out. Should be a lot of fun. $3.99 comic, but it's a comic book page pick of the month through DCBS. So, if you shop through DCBS, 50% off there. If you shop at a local store, let them know this is something you want. That way they can make sure they have enough copies for you, and it may be enough that they decide to go for that retailer incentive cover or get the subscription variant for you or whatever. I mean, if you want a particular cover, let your retailer know. It's only sporting, and frankly, it just makes sure you get what you're looking for. So, should be a lot of fun. Once again, that's Star Trek Planet of the Apes number 1 of 5 from IDW on page 152 and 153 of the previews catalog. Check it out.
Guys, TJ here again with my next selection. It's in the IDW section on page 155. It's the Garbage Pail Kids comic book Puketacular by Peter Bagg, Dean Hashbill, and also some other various writers and artists. I wanted to highlight this month just because being the age that I am in my early 30s, you know, when I was growing up as a kid, the Garbage Pail Kids were huge. And I distinctly remember a lot of times walking home from school and stopping at the Circle K. And, you know, if I had any spare change or I had some of my allowance left, I would try and buy a pack of these cards because I was a pretty big fan of them. And so I'm not sure if this is an ongoing or just a one-shot, but they do have a few variants, like a Peter Bagg variant and a Joe Simcoe variant as well. But it just looks like a great, great attempt to bring back one of these great 80s 80s ephemera kind of things. So this is what it says. Remember mullets and teased bangs, stonewashed denim jackets and jeans? Well, not everything about the 80s was lame, because that's when the Garbage Pail Kids ruled the world. Those irreverent satirical stickers quickly became a pop cultural phenomenon, but they never had their own comic book until now. In the spirit of the avant-garde cartoonists and humorists who fathered these miscreants, a new generation of alternate comics creators has lent their unique talents to bring the Garbage Pail Kids into the wacky world of comics. So it just looks like a great funny one-off, or maybe if it does well, it'll turn into a series. But with Peter Bagg and Dean Haspel and a few others doing some work, I'm on board. And like I said, this is kind of something back from when I was a kid. So this looks like something to check out. And if you're interested in Garbage Pail Kids, check it out on page 155 of the IDW section. Guys, TJ here again with my next selection, this time on page 165 of the IDW section. It is Transformers versus G.I. Joe, Volume 1, with story by Tom Scioli and John Barber, and art by Tom Scioli. This collects issues 0 through 4 of the new Transformers versus G.I. Joe section, and since I'm a collected editions guy, I just wanted people to know that it's coming out this month. I think I spoke a little bit about Transformers vs. G.I. Joe number 1 when it came out about 3 or 4 months ago. But I'm a real big fan of Tom Scioli's art, and he just has done a great job of taking, taking this concept back to like what you would expect it if it was written by kids who loved the Transformers and the G.I. Joes. And I think that's something that sometimes is missing from comics, is kind of like a young, playful attitude about this kind of stuff. So if you're interested in Transformers versus G.I. Joe, the first trade is out from IDW on page 165. Hey guys, this is TJ back for another IDW selection, this time on page 180. It is Corto Maltese, Under the Sign of Capricorn by Hugo Pratt. And this is kind of the definitive English language Corto Maltese series beginning here. It says the first of 12 volumes, black and white. This one is 140 pages. Looks like they're doing them oversized, 9.5 inches by 11.6 inches. And so there's just a lot of different creators on this two-page spread that they're advertising this, discussing how great Hugo Pratt was and how influential Corto Maltese is. You have the Milo Manara saying, Hugo Pratt is among the greatest storytellers in all of literature, but what's more, he also draws like a god. Frank Miller says he's one of the true masters of comic art. And it's just kind of one of the series that was really before its time in terms of storytelling, in terms of graphic novels and things like that. So if you're a huge fan of adventure comics, it looks like IDW is kicking off a great 12-volume series. And here's the first one, and I'm sure DCBS will have it at a great discount. So if you're looking for some Corto Maltese with retranslated from his original scripts, then you should check out IDW page 180.
This is Derek from the Comics Alternative podcast and blog. My next pick of the month is in the IDW section, and you'll find it on page 182, Milt Gross's New York. Here is a lost graphic novel from one of the first and most brilliant graphic novelists, Milt Gross. In a mind-blowing, laugh-filled, freewheeling tour of New York, Gross's character Pop and his sidekick son blast through the East Side, the West Side, Chinatown, and Harlem. The demented duo roar through Yankee Stadium, the New York Public Library, and Coney Island. Now, if you're not familiar with who Milt Gross is, I'm going to pause for a moment and let you get to your browser where you can look him up on Wikipedia. Go ahead, look him up. I don't want to wait too long, so I'll tell you that what you'll find there is one of the legends of American comics art. However, I think that he's one of the most underrated comic artists, and it's good that IDW is bringing out some of his strips into this collection, Milt Gross's New York. He was definitely one of the early innovators of the comics medium, and in fact, one could make the argument that he actually wrote the first American graphic novel. In the 1930s, I believe it was, he wrote He'd Done Her Wrong, and the subtitle of that is The Great American Novel, and in parentheses, With No Words. That's right. This is a visual novel, no words whatsoever. The story is being told completely through illustrations. This is probably still in print somewhere. I know I have a copy that Fantagraphics put out a few years ago, so you can probably find it. If not still in print, then I'm sure you can find it used. But you definitely have to check it out. But you also have to check out page 182 of the October catalog. Milt Gross's New York, coming out through IDW. Derek again from the Comics Alternative Podcast. My next pick of the month is also an IDW, and in fact, it's one page over from my last recommendation. It's on page 183. This is the first trade collection of Craig Yeo's Weird Love. The title of this collection is You Know You Want It. If you don't know who Craig Yeo is, then you should probably cut off this podcast, because shame on you. You don't know who this very important editor, writer, archivist, historian is. You don't deserve to be listening to this podcast. But if you're sticking around and you still don't know who he is, then, you know, he is one of the most important historian, editors, and archivists alive today. Craig Yeo has done more than most to bring back old comics, especially those that are pre-code, many by famous artists like, say, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, Will Eisner. But he also does a lot. He brings back and restores quite a number of long-forgotten comics, some of whom have creators we don't even know who they are because no names were attached. He's done some incredible things over the past several years. This is one of his most recent projects, Weird Love. This comes out every other month, and what he does is he collects a variety of old romance comics, and he does so with an awareness that if you look at the comics in a particular way, it's a little strange, it's a little funky, it's a little askew and kinky, and that's what his series Weird Love is all about. Now, he's doing what he did previously with Haunted Horror. After so many issues, he'll collect them into a nice, hardbound collection. And the first one, You Know You Want It, will be coming out pretty darn soon. And in fact, this would be the perfect gift for next Valentine's Day. So check out page 183 of the October catalog and find Craig Yeo's Weird Love.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan, and I'm a fan of this podcast. And this month, I am looking forward to a comic book called Graveyard Shift. It's a new number one from Image Comics. It's on page 196 of your previews catalog. The story is by Jay Ferber, and the art and cover are by Fran Bueno. And the story goes as this: reunited after the memorable run on the critically acclaimed Noble Causes, Jay Ferber and Fran Bueno bring you a new tale of crime, horror, and romance. It's Fright Night-style thrills and castle-style crime-solving as a homicide detective and his girlfriend find their love put to the ultimate test when they run afoul of a gang of vampires. I love Image Comics because they do put some nice preview art in here. Now, I didn't read Noble Causes, but I do think it was, from what I heard, a good series. Right here on the solicit page, you're offering trades 1 through 10, volumes 1 through 10, so it must have been a good series going on that long. And I do like Jay Ferber's other works. I'm currently reading Copperhead, which is coming out right now from Image, and previously read Dynamo 5, so I did enjoy both of those series. And for those reasons, and also I do like a good mix of crime, horror, romance stories, that those are the reasons why I'm really excited about this comic book, and I think you should be too. You should take a look at it. The price is $3.50 for 32 pages. It's going to be released on December 24th, Christmas Eve. Good time to pick up your comics, read a nice crime, horror, romance story, and I do believe from DCBS, the price is 50% off. Yet another reason to pick up this book. So once again, the title is Graveyard Shift. It's new issue number one. You should be picking up all issue number ones from Image Comics, so they're just killing it right now. And that's all I've got. Thanks a lot, John.
We all have advantages over one another, but what if you were capable of doing things that most of us can only imagine? What would you do, and who would you be? A doctor? An athlete? A soldier? A hero? Everyone has to make choices about how to use the abilities they were born with. But they're not like us. That's the solicitation blurb for the title They're Not Like Us, number 1, from Image Comics on page 198. This is written by Eric Stevenson. We've got art and cover by Simon Gain. They've got on page 199 of the previous catalog, I guess, the first page of the comic, or at least a sample page, where we can get the art style. And the whole concept of this is a world with people with superheroic powers and abilities. And what decisions do they make? What kinds of people do they become? How do they use these powers? It's got the trappings of the superhero genre in terms of powers, abilities, but it may not be a superhero title as such, because they may decide not to go dress up in fancy costumes and either rob banks or stop people from robbing banks. So this is the kind of thing I really enjoy, seeing different takes on the superhero genre, the attributes and trappings thereof. It's probably going to be, almost certainly going to be, an incredibly different take on that sort of a thing than the Marvel Universe, the DC Universe, Astro City, or some of these other things. So I'm going to sample this. It looks like a lot of fun. It's a $2.99 comic, full color, 24 pages. Image comes out with a lot of very interesting number ones. This one seems exciting to me, so we've got a 50% discount through DCBS because it's a comic book page pick of the month, and I think it's worth checking out. So once again, that's They're Not Like Us, number one, from Image Comics on page 198 and 199.
Drew and Kyle here with Comics for Fun and Profit, and we are on page 202 of your previews guide. We're in the Image section, and we're looking at Sheltered 15. Why are we looking at Sheltered 15? Because Sheltered is ending. This is the final issue in the Sheltered series, and it's actually been a series that I've been reading quite a bit and really enjoyed. It's Ed Brisson doing the writing, John Christmas on art. They told us about issue 10 in the letters column that this was going to end at 15, so they'd known where they were going with this. It's, of course, your pre-apocalyptic book where you deal with, you know, a coven of preppers in the woods preparing their families and this little convent for surviving the end of the world, and what would happen if their children rose up, killed them all, and took over that camp. And it's been a great ride through the issues we've had so far, and this is the end of it, but a great series, and make sure we don't miss the last one on this. So Comics for Fun and Profit wanted to make sure we highlighted Sheltered number 15.
This is something that I read the first five issues and jumped off. And you've been kind of raving and beating the drum for this book, so I might pick up the trade. I think they're offering the first two trades again, so I might pick up the second trade to pick up where I left off and see what it's all about. Because I know it was kind of just meandering there a little bit in the beginning.
Uh-huh.
So it sounds to me like it's heated up. This has also been optioned as a television show or maybe a movie or something.
I know it's been optioned, but I didn't catch exactly what format.
This could be coming soon to a theater near you or a small screen near you. I'm going to give it another shot and check it out, because it was interesting.
Comics for Fun and Profit likes Sheltered number 15, the series as a whole, and number 15 coming out in December from Image Comics.
Hey guys, TJ back with my next selection. It's in the Image Comics section on page 212, Stray Bullets, Volume 6, Killers, trade paperback with story and art by David Lapham. And so this is, it's 248 pages, black and white for $19.99. And this is basically the first eight issues collected into trade form of the new Stray Bullets stories that just restarted up at Image. I know he put out the Uber Aulis edition, and then they've, I think, solicited the first couple trades as well, if people want to get into that backstory. But this is the first trade of the first issues, and it's a big chunk at eight issues. So, you know, Stray Bullets is just a great crime noir story, and it's just such a great dark story, and David Latham is such a great crime writer. So if you're interested in checking out Stray Bullets, the new comics, then the trade paperback is on page 212 of the Image section.
Hey guys, this is Chris Brawlinator Brawley with my first previews pick this month. And it's one from Marvel, found on page 14 of the Marvel previews. Neil Gaiman's angelic warrior woman Angela finally gets her own series after being introduced into the Marvel U in the final issue of the Age of Ultron miniseries. And then she appeared in the recent Original Sin tie-in miniseries, Thor and Loki, the Tenth Realm. Here's what we know. Angela is a woman trapped between two warring realms. Asgard, ruled by her father Odin, and a secret 10th realm of angelic warriors that trained her to hate Asgard. Now she must learn to use her deadly skills to balance the debts she's accrued. Writers Kieran Gillen and Marguerite Bennett, along with artist Phil Jimenez and Stephanie Hans, will chronicle Angela's quest to free herself and forge her own destiny in this new ongoing series. Gillen is no stranger to Asgard, as he worked on the critically acclaimed Beta Ray Bill Godhunter limited series back in, I think it was 2009. And he and Hans have worked together before on the Last Journey into Mystery series. I'm expecting this new series to sort of be an Asgardian version of Black Widow, and I expect it will likely explore Angela taking her journey across Asgard and figuring out her place in it, as well as the Marvel Universe at large. With this title, alongside Jason Aaron's newest volume of Thor and Al Ewing's Loki, Agent of Asgard, it looks like Marvel has no less than three Asgardian titles in publication at once and all at a time when the universe is without the original God of Thunder. Marvel definitely has moxie, I'll give them that. Be sure to check out Angela, Asgard's Assassin, on page 14 of the Marvel Previews catalog. This is Brawlinator again, and this pick is from page 16 of the Marvel Previews with an all-new ongoing title from the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division, better known as SHIELD. Wow, that's a mouthful. Described as high-octane adventures in the Marvel Universe, this series, from writer Mark Waid and art by Carlos Pacheco, is sure to be a hit among fans of the ABC television show, as well as longtime SHIELD enthusiasts. The series, which launches in December, is expected to center on Special Agent Phil Coulson and Nick Fury Jr. as they take point in the secretive peacekeeping force's preemptive war on evil. I'm expecting this book to be a lot of fun, as Mark Waid has said before that he's looking forward to being able to introduce the rest of the TV SHIELD agents to the Marvel Universe proper, May, Fitz, Simmons, and the others. But before you presume that this is a companion book to the ABC's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. television series, Waid has also stated that this is straight up Marvel Universe, meaning that it, quote, counts, unquote, in ongoing continuity and in a big way, emphasis on big. I also read that this series is planning to frequently use the one-and-done formula for its first series of tales, which means that anyone in the Marvel Universe could be tapped, from Cap to Thor, Groot to Man-Thing. Many of my favorite Marvel titles have been using the one-and-done formula splendidly, including She-Hulk and Moon Knight. While I cooled a bit towards the television show during its first, well, the first half of the first season, or the first half of the first season, you know what I mean. Captain America Winter Soldier and its effects on the TV series salvaged the program, in my opinion. And while season two has begun on a very high note, I am equally excited about this new comic series. Check out SHIELD number 1 on page 16 this month in the Marvel edition of Previews.
Kyle and Drew here with Comics for Fun and Profit. And in your Marvel guide on page 19, we have Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 1. I've been really impressed with the Amazing Spider-Man since the number 1 run several months ago. And it looks like we're going to get a large annual series written by a couple people. Really enjoying this series. Don't like my writer taking some off, but I'm really interested in what they're doing with these characters. So excited for the annual. Are you excited for it, Drew?
Oh, yeah. And this will be a nice little palate cleanser, I think, because everything else Spider-Man is going to be immersed in the Spider-Verse, you know, and the Spider-Verse. And so this is kind of going back for some Spider-Man stories, you know, regular Marvel 616, which is kind of cool. I wonder if we'll get any of Silk, because Silk is my new favorite character and Amazing, and it looks like she might be missing from all the Spider-Verse stuff that's happening. So I'm anxious to get back to her. I don't know if she'll be in this or not, but this is it's a little pricey. It's an annual, so it's $4.99, but it is 40 pages. Events kind of annoy you, and you don't want to do with the Spider-Verse. Pick up the annual then, because it'll be regular Spider-Man stories, and you can check those out.
And it looks like we've got two separate stories going on here. It looks like Sean Ryan and Brandon Peterson are going to do an event that is going to apparently have a little shock value to it. And then Jai Nitz and Ron Salas are going to feature a fan favorite supporting cast member in a story. So it looks like we've got two separate stories in this, both diverting from what's going on in the Spider-Verse. So I think this sounds really cool as an annual. It's a really great cover, and I think it's a really good idea of Marvel to give people a break from some of this Spider-Verse stuff and still give them some of the Spider-Man they know and love. So Comics for Fun and Profit is high on the Spider-Man Annual number one from Marvel Comics.
And don't forget to check us out at comicsfunprofit.com.
On page 19 of the Marvel previews is Spider-Man and the X-Men number 1. This title is essentially replacing Wolverine and the X-Men because, well, Wolverine's dying. The whole Death of Wolverine miniseries and all that, I think, kind of implies that. So somebody's got to fill in. But, you know, Wolverine was kind of the headmaster, the principal, the lead guy at the school. And this is Spider-Man, so he's not getting that role. Apparently, he's going to be the new guidance counselor. Because what better person to get guidance from than Spider-Man? The one who's constantly getting slammed by the media, left, right, and center. He's a good person to ask for advice on stuff. I don't know what they're going to do with this, and what a non-mutant character like Spider-Man's doing at the X-Men. Or what somebody who wears a mask full-time as a hero is going to be doing in the X-Men Academy. But I'm curious. This seems like a really interesting concept, and given what a hard time Peter Parker had in high school and stuff like that, I think there's a lot they can actually do with this concept and this approach, and I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun. So that's going to be a $3.99 monthly comic, or maybe faster than monthly, this is Marvel after all, of Spider-Man and the X-Men, and this is probably the one you can use as the barometer for when Wolverine comes back. By the time this gets to a number that's worth canceling at Marvel, maybe as high as 36, maybe as low as 24, who knows, that's when we're going to probably see Wolverine come back, steal this title back from Spider-Man. Or they may just do this as a shorter run and have somebody else inserted into the X-Men franchise for a bit. Either way, worth checking out. Once again, Spider-Man and the X-Men number 1, page 19 in the Marvel previews. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS because it's a comic book page pick of the month. Check it out. You ever think there's just so many people in a franchise like the Avengers, you need a scorecard to keep track? Wouldn't it be handy if they gave you one of those program guides like you get for a baseball game if you're going to do the whole sabermetrics and track all the stats and whatnot? Wouldn't that be handy? Well, wait no more. We've got Avengers Now on page 32 of the Marvel previews. This is an official handbook of the Marvel Universe. This is the first one they've done in a while. We're going to get 64 pages of all new profiles, including some of the newer characters to the Avenger franchise in the Marvel Universe, such as Angela, the new Captain Universe Night Mask, and the Superior Spider-Man, the Apocalypse Twins, Black Order, Magnetron, the Ames Scientist Supreme. We're also going to get some of the allies of the Avengers, Nick Fury, Phil Coulson, Nova, Hazmat from Avengers Underground, and they're going to do an updated appendix for every single member, so the entire Avengers roster will make an appearance in these 64 pages. I'm imagining very fine print on some of the things in the appendix then. So there's a lot of Avengers. The image they've got here on page 32 here is essentially featuring a lot of the prominent characters, both in terms of what's going on in the Marvel comics and kind of implying some of the stuff from the movies. Because we've got the Winter Soldier, we've got the female Thor, we've got Sam Wilson as the Captain America, you know, Falcon as Captain America. We've got Superior Iron Man, we've got Doctor Strange, Ant-Man, Deathlok, Hellstrom, some Son of Satan, and Medusa, and the female Thor. So a lot of the new, interesting, and changed aspects of the Avengers franchise are going to get spotlighted here. For those who are unfamiliar with what an official handbook of the Marvel Universe is, as just kind of a data junkie myself, I love these. You get an entry for each of the characters, and it's basically going to give you, you know, their stats, their name, their family, you know, how tall they are, that kind of stuff, what their aliases are or have been, and then it gives you their history in a text format of, you know, grew up as a young person, you know, whatever happened, you know, that led to where they were. Kind of a recap, both of their origin, but also the major things that have happened since then. And you also get a write-up on their powers, what can they do, and as a reference book, I find these things really fun, really interesting, and just as a kind of a piece of history, because this is a snapshot in time of how the Avengers look right now. And if you were to compare that to similar such things that they did a decade ago or even further back, going back to the 80s when these handbooks started, you can just see how the characters have evolved, how they've been changed, replaced, or rebuilt in some cases. This isn't the sort of thing that's for everybody, and I know it. There is no narrative here. But in the form of the histories and stuff, the amount of story they recap and cover there is staggering. So if you're interested in these characters, you want to learn more about the backstories. Sometimes they even include, you know, where to go find some of these stories, because they list the first appearances and some of the other major appearances sometimes. Worth doing. It's a $4.99 handbook, 64 pages. Usually they have really good reference art for the characters. So if you're an artist and you're like, gee, what's the Falcon version of Captain America's costume look like, this could be a very good reference. Some versions of the Marvel Handbook have been much, much better references than others, but usually they're really good for that sort of thing. Once again, this is a DCBS pick of the month for comic book page, so we've got a 50% discount on this. That makes that $4.99 price tag a bit more palatable. But again, 64 pages. So this is something that, again, I get a lot of fun out of. I really enjoy these things, and I think they're worth checking out. I'd like to see this get supported so we get more of these handbooks periodically, just to be learning more and getting kind of, again, that roster of different teams and that snapshot of what they think their history is over at Marvel. So check it out.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. My last pick for this month's preview spotlight comes from the Marvel section on page 47. Moon Knight number 10, written by Brian Wood, art by Greg Smallwood, colors by Jordi Belair. The solicit read, Moon Knight's latest mission, break into the United Nations building. Can he possibly deal with the consequences of these actions? Now, you know, I've started reading this series from issue number 6, you know, and, you know, I like this take on Moon Knight. I like him, you know, in the white suit and tie. That's, you know, I think that's great. I remember Moon Knight from the 1970s, you know, with the shroud and the cape and everything. But like I said, I like this version of Moon Knight better. And also, too, you know, to me, the Moon Knight character seems a little bit more defined, you know, in this series. That, you know, he's a little bit more self-assured, he's a little bit more arrogant, you know, while fighting, you know, the bad guys, but his personal life is a mess, you know. Also, too, I like the little quirks that they gave him, is that, you know, while he's in, you know, his suit and tie, he's always straightening out his tie. I thought that, you know, adds a little bit more to the character. Also, too, you know, I like Greg Smallwood's art. I remember his artwork from Dream Thief, you know, and I really liked it. I really like what he's doing in Moon Knight. And his artwork kind of reminds me, you know, to me, kind of reminds me of a little bit of the Batman the Animated Series, you know. So I just, you know, it just looks pretty cool. You know, I like it. And then I love the colors by Jordi Belair, you know. I like the colors that she does in the Moon Knight series. You know, I love the pure white that she has on Moon Knight, because the focus is always on him. You know, it's something that I really like. So that's, and also too, the other thing I like about this Moon Knight series is that, to me, it tells, I guess, sort of like self-contained stories, but yet it also adds up to a bigger story. You know, so, you know, that's the thing I like about it. To me, it's a little bit more refreshing to read these kind of comics, especially nowadays. So if you guys get a chance, pick up Moon Knight number 10. You know, I've already got this issue on my pull list at, you know, Dragon's Lair's Collectibles and Comics in the Mililani Malka Shopping Center. You know, thank you for listening. Back to you, John.
This is the Brawlinator again with another pick from this month's edition of Marvel Previews, and this one is Hulk vs. Thanos, an all-new limited series from Thanos creator Jim Starlin himself. The Green Goliath will face off against the Mad Titan in a 4-issue battle royale. Originally, this story was planned for the Savage Hulk series. It was an arc by Starlin when the series was first announced back in March. This story is self-contained, even though it is part of the tale begun in Thanos Annual and the recent Infinity Revelation graphic novel. However, I've also read that this story takes place before Infinity Revelation. In this story, Annihilus and Blastar have something Pip the Troll dearly wants, and they'll only trade it for Bruce Banner. The Troll goes for the deal, but then suffers buyer's remorse. But Pip doesn't have the muscle to take on Blastar and Annihilus, so he decides to call upon someone who does. This series also features appearances by Iron Man and members of S.H.I.E.L.D. Sounds fun. Given the low sales numbers for Savage Hulk, it's likely that Marvel simply chose to promote this planned arc in a new mainstream-friendly title in order to achieve maximum results. Either way, sign me up for Hulk vs. Thanos. This marks Starlin's third project for Marvel since the two mended fences following a potential legal battle over the company's use of Starlin's creation in the Marvel movies. I think Marvel would do well to keep Jim Starlin happy and employed. Plus, he's such a good creator. I don't understand why they wouldn't. The preview artwork looks phenomenal, and you should check it out on page 53 of this month's Marvel Previews. Hey guys, this is Brawlinator again with my final pick from Marvel. It's a brand new number one issue of Powers found on page 78 of the Marvel Previews catalog. Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Lavon Oeming bring a new jumping on point for their creation, the Eisner Award-winning tale of two homicide detectives who are assigned cases specifically involving superpowers. Now this intrigues me. There is a Powers TV show coming to Sony PlayStation TV in December, and to the best of my recollection, I've never sampled anything under Marvel's Icon line. As many of you may already know, Icon is Marvel's imprint, created in 2004 for creator-owned material. Powers is set in a world where superpowers are relatively common, but not mundane. It follows the lives of two homicide detectives, Christian Walker and Dina Pilgrim, police officers in a Chicago homicide department devoted to cases that involve powers, people with superpowers. Walker himself used to be a costumed hero named Diamond, but became a police officer after he lost his abilities. It's an intriguing premise, the artwork looks fun, and it's a double-sized issue for the price of one, so I think I'll take the bait of a new number one and pick up a copy of Powers Number One, found on page 78 of the Marvel Previews catalog this month.
Hey guys, TJ back again. This time we're in Abstract Studios on page 244 with Rachel Rising Volume 5 trade paperback by Terry Moore. This says, Rachel, Jet, and Aunt Johnny recover quickly from their harrowing adventures with the air of a magical herbal wrap, but they soon discover that they've been the victims of a serial killer. Now they're determined to find the mysterious predator and deliver him to the evils of Zoe's knife. This new book is the fifth trade in Terry Moore's Eisner-nominated series. Collects issues 25 through 30. So I just wanted people to be aware that the new trade for Terry Moore comes out this month. And, Rachel Rising is one of those series that has had somewhat low individual sales lately. And, Terry Moore is an independent creator who's always kind of doing it all by himself. So he has to make sure that he gets enough, single issues and things like that. But the trades also help enable him to keep this great horror series going. You know, I know horror isn't for everyone. I know John's not a huge fan of the horror, but for those people that like Terry Moore and his amazing ability to draw great female characters and just a great storyteller in general, the new Rachel Rising trade paperback's out, and that's on page 244 in the Abstract Studios section.
Hey guys, it's Drew with my last pick, and this is from Danger Zone Comics on page 247 of Previews. It's Holy F number one. It's not really F, but you can probably figure out what that is. Holy F number one is written by Nick Marino with art by Daniel Aruda Massa. Well, let me tell you a little bit about what this might be about then. Why is a nun barging into a seedy Tokyo karaoke bar in the middle of the night to find a sleazy naked man smoking meth? Because that man is Jesus. And Sister Maria needs him to help her and Satan stop humanity's mythological gods from messing up the earth. Includes two limited variant covers, each limited to 1,500 copies. And ask your local retailer if they will be offering one of the limited edition store-exclusive mythological god covers. Wow. So you can get the main cover. They're all 32 pages. You can get the main cover for $3.99, the Jesus cover for $4.99, and the Satan cover for $4.99. I'm interested in seeing what the sales numbers are on these, if they even crack the top 300 for John's numbers, just to see if Jesus does, in fact, outsell Satan. I would hope so. But, you know, you never know. It's a fickle marketplace. Again, this is Holy F number one by Nick Marino and Daniel Aruda Massa, and it's too strange not to pre-order. So check it out on page 247 of previews.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative Podcast. My next pick of the month is on page 248 of the catalog. The publisher is Alternative Comics. This is Labyrinthectomy / Luncheonette. This is a one-shot by writer-artist Chris Silla. Labyrinthectomy / Luncheonette is a funny and freaky two-in-one comic book album. Side one features Greasy Spoon yarn spinning with the usual gang of regulars. And I'm not sure who the usual gang of regulars are here. Side B starts in front with more comics by Chris Silla, the cartoonist behind cult graphic novel The Heavy Hand and contributor to Kramer's Ergo and Study Group. This is described as weirdo laughs and head-scratching fun. Now, I think the description at the end, weirdo laughs and head-scratching fun, has me right there. I'm not familiar with Chris Silla's work. It seems like I've seen it and read his comics somewhere before. I can't remember where. It could have been Kramer's Ergo in the past. But this is something that I'm very much willing to try. One, because the little bit of art that I see here on page 248 looks really interesting. But more importantly, this is coming out from Alternative Comics. Alternative Comics is one of those very, very small publishers that does really good things, and not many people know about them. They come out with something probably about every other month. It's not that frequent, but almost everything they do is worth checking out. So I'm going to do check out Labyrinthectomy and Luncheonette. You'll find the solicit on page 248 of the catalog.
Hey guys, TJ back again with another one of my favorite picks of this month. And that would be in the Bergen Street Press section on page 274 of the preview section. This is Copra Round 1 Trade Paperback with writing and art by Michelle Fife. And this is one of those great indie success stories. Michelle Fife has kind of started this comic, you know, completely independently published, selling it through his own Etsy store. And it's kind of a Suicide Squad, his take on the Suicide Squad, which is some really great art, really great storytelling. And, you know, he was so successful selling single issues and these little compendiums that a local comic shop in, I think, Brooklyn or one of the New York boroughs picked him up and is kind of publishing it, you know, kind of the trades for him. And this is the first one. And it's this comic that kind of got him some work at Marvel. I think he's working in the Ultimate Universe right now as a writer. But yeah, so this is an up-and-coming creator, Michelle Fife. And if you're interested in checking out some of his groundbreaking work that's kind of the reason why his name's known in the industry right now, then you're going to want to check out Copra, it says Round 1. So here's the description. They're ugly, they're mean, but up until today, they've always been loyal. So one of their own betrays them, and the men and women of Copra have no choice but to turn their nightmare skills back on everyone who looked at them funny. Collecting the first six issues of Michael Fife's Superhero Revenge series, focusing on the exploits of the Copra team, a group of superpowered vigilantes and mercenaries betrayed by one of their own and hunted by the U.S. government. It's 160 pages, 1995. Yeah, so I'm just a big fan of Copra, and this is the first collection that they're kind of with wide release. You know, before you kind of had to just check in at Bergen Street Comics webpage to see if they were releasing anything and just hope that you got in before they all sold out. But this is something that you can pre-order. So check out Copra Round 1 on page 274 in the Bergen Street section.
It's Brawlinator again with another pick from this month's edition of Previews, and this one is Escape from New York number 1 from Boom Studios. According to the solicits, the crime rate in the United States has risen 400%. After humiliating the president in front of the world and destroying America's one chance to end World War III, Snake Plissken has become America's most wanted man in a land of criminals and the insane. Snake Plissken is back and everyone wants him dead. Luckily, Snake knows the feeling all too well. This book starts about 20 seconds before the 1981 movie by the same name ends and picks up directly with all the pieces on the board the way they were in the film. It's 1997 via 1981's vision of the future. So the creators have explicitly stated that there will be no sudden leaps of technology or anything outside what was in the film. The creator, Christopher Sabella, or Sabila, and illustrator Diego Barreto are treating the movie and its visual style as their official style guide. Boom has had such a positive response from their other John Carpenter, Kurt Russell movie property, Big Trouble in Little China, that it must have seemed like a no-brainer to select this as their next property, which happens to be the first Carpenter-Russell team-up. Some comic aficionados or Snake Plissken fans may remember that back in 1997, Marvel Comics released a one-shot of The Adventures of Snake Plissken, which also took place after the first film, and a few years later, CrossGen Comics released a four-issue limited series entitled John Carpenter's Snake Plissken Chronicles, which picked up the morning after the first movie. So none of this is necessarily a new idea. Hopefully, this new ongoing series will outlast what came before it. As with Eric Powell and Brian Chirilla's Big Trouble in Little China comic, also from Boom, there'd be no point in doing it if they're not going to have Kurt Russell up front and center. Snake Plissken is a criminal folk hero known across America and one that's a magnet for trouble and bad news wherever he goes. With such a big gap between the two escape movies and a lot of geography to cover, this ought to be a fun adventure. Let's enjoy the journey. Check out Escape from New York on page 283 of the previews catalog this month.
Hello, this is Ian Gowan again, back with another comic book pick, and the title is called Rocket Salvage. It's on page 289 of your previews catalog. It's from Archaea, which is Boom Studios now. It's a new issue number 1 of 6. The story is by, and I don't think I can pronounce this correctly, but Vahudi Mercado, and the art is by Bakan, with cover art by Bakan or Yehudi Mercado. And I do like how Boom has doing their solicits now. I don't know about when they started this, but it was within the past year or so. But they have 3 columns that say why we love it, why you'll love it, and what it's about. And I think this is a great redesign of the comic book solicit. And in the why we love it column, there is when writer-animator Yehudi Mercado of Guardians of the Galaxy, Universal Weapon, Pantalones, and TX came to us with a dysfunctional family drama about 3 clones running a rocket ship repair shop. We were already on board. Throw in some spaceport street racing and a few alien gangsters. Just tell us when to start our engines. And then I'm just going to skip down to what it's about. Primo Rocket used to be the fastest speed racer in the galaxy, but after a crash that sealed the fate of his space station city home, Rio Rojo, Primo has resigned himself to life as a lowly spaceship salvage yard owner. However, his 2 kids, Harvest clone Beta and Beta's genius girl clone Zeta, can't seem to keep out of trouble when this dysfunctional family suddenly becomes the target of an intergalactic manhunt. The family has to come together to save their home. I love these type of comics that are just a mashup of a lot of different genres, and they're just you can just tell by the artwork here on the solicit page 289 that this is going to be a real zany tale. It's got a ton of different colors and a ton of different things going on in the cover here. It seems like to be a really sort of a humorous space tale, which I do enjoy. Now, the price on this one is $3.99 for 32 pages. It doesn't say right here on the page when it's coming out, but I assume it's coming out in December, and I really look forward to it. Once again, this comic book is called Rocket Salvage, issue number 1, from Boom Studios / Archaea. Thanks a lot, John.
Who's the cat that woke up at when there's danger all about?
Sir!
Right on. They say this cat Shaft is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth!
I'm talking about Shaft.
We can dig it!
This is Brawlinator again with my final pick of the month, and it's found on page 305 of the previews catalog this month. This one from Dynamite Entertainment. And if you don't recognize the 1971 intro by Isaac Hayes, the book is called Shaft No. 1. The black icon who has gone toe-to-toe with organized crime bosses, stood up to the cops, squared off against kidnappers, and foiled assassination attempts in his many novel and film appearances. For the first time ever, the infamous detective's origins are explored, courtesy of this new ongoing series by Dynamite Entertainment. The creator, David F. Walker, is also an award-winning journalist, filmmaker, and the author of the young adult series, The Adventures of Darius Logan. His publication, Badass Mofo, became internationally known as the indispensable resource guide to black films of the 1970s. And he is co-author of the book, Reflections on Blaxploitation, Actors and Directors Speak. And if those qualifications aren't enough to convince you of his street cred, then his work in comics surely will. His credits include the series number 13 from Dark Horse Comics, The Army of Dr. Moreau from Monkey Brain Comics, and The Supernulls Experiment from Canon Comics. The art is by, and I'm going to butcher this name, Bilquis Evely. She's a rising star on Dynamite's roster of talented artists. Recently, she worked alongside writer Chris Robertson on the critically acclaimed Doc Savage miniseries. Her other works include the Shadow Green Hornet Dark Knights crossover event with writer Michael Uslan, the Shadow Annual No. 1, and Miss Fury. I think Miss Evely's experience with Dynamite's Pulp Heroes line makes her the perfect fit for the mean streets of 70s New York City in Shaft. Check out Shaft No. 1 from Dynamite. You can find it on page 305 in this month's previews catalog. Thanks, everyone.
This is Derek again from the Comics Alternative podcast and blog, and my next picks of the month, yes, plural, picks, you'll find on pages 338 and 339 of the previews catalog. You can find these in one of my favorite sections every month of previews, and that is the section from Fantagraphics. I'm a very big Fantagraphics fan. And there are three titles that I want to highlight. First, there is Vapor by Max. I was first familiar with the word work of Max, and that's the name he goes by, one word, Max. So I guess it's like Madonna or Prince. But anyway, I was first introduced to the work of Max when I read quite a number of years ago his The Extended Dream of Mr. D. The collection of this came out in 2000 from Drawn in Quarterly, another one of my favorite publishers, and it really blew me away. You can tell that this was a dream Freudian slash psychoanalytic kind of narrative. Very surreal, fascinating, and wonderful art. Back in 2006, Max published another incredible work, this one I think through Fantagraphics, Barden the Surrealist. And as you can tell by the title, much like The Extended Dream of Mr. D, there's quite a surrealist tone to the narrative, so that's definitely worth checking out. But he's got a new one that's going to be coming out soon, and the title of this is Vapor. The solicit is thus. Award-winning Spanish cartoonist Max is back, engaging in delightful philosophical mind games. Vapor stars an endearing protagonist who flees the modern world for the solitude of the desert. Max deploys a striking, crisp, black-and-white graphic style perfectly suited for this desert-based fantasia. So that's something definitely worth checking out. Now, also on that page, on 338, you'll find the next installment of work from the great Jacques Tardy. This one is Run Like Crazy, Run Like Hell by Jacques Tardy and Jean-Patrick Machette. It's translated by Doug Headline. After the teeth-rattling 1-2 punch of West Coast Blues and Like a Sniper lining up his shot, both of which I have, Jacques Tardy makes a third appointment with ace crime writer Jean-Patrick Machette for his wildest adaptation yet. A tale of mendacity and heroism, Run Like Crazy, Run Like Hell is full of moments of pitch-black humor with a strong current of socio-political satire beneath its bleak surface. So this is a great example of Franco-Belgian comics art, and you should definitely check out the work of Tardy. And then the other work in the Fantagraphic section that I wanted to highlight is on page 339. Another from some of my favorites, the Hernandez Brothers. This time it's from Gilbert. This is Ophelia, 11 Rockets book. For fans of Love and Rockets and the Hernandez brothers, you know that for the past several years, Fantagraphics has been collecting and repackaging their entire catalog, the various pieces from the different series of Love and Rockets. And right now we're in the third series. They're coming out annually as a graphic novel. And many times they will group these according to who the writer-artist is, either Gilbert or Jaime, his brother. And this one is by Gilbert Hernandez, and it's Ophelia. Most of the narratives in this collection reflect Luba's cousin, Ophelia. Now, if you don't know who Luba is, do a Google search on Love, Rockets, Luba, and you will definitely get an eyeful. I'll just leave it at that. This is the fifth volume of Gilbert Hernandez's complete Love and Rockets material. In Ophelia, the sisters, the kids, and the cousins are all settled comfortably in California. When Ophelia threatens to write a book about Luba, past memories and pain resurface. Meanwhile, Luba's children show that a talent for trouble may be hereditary. These vividly drawn characters live, love, age, fight, and die in this sweeping multi-generational saga. You can always count on incredible work from Gilbert Hernandez. My colleague at the Comics Alternative, Andy Kunkka, and I had the pleasure of interviewing him a couple of weeks ago, and I have to say it's one of the most enjoyable interviews we ever did. I love his work, I love talking to him, and you'll probably love this as well, Ophelia, a Love and Rockets book. So you can find on pages 338 and 339 of the catalog, Vapor, Run Like Crazy, Run Like Hell, and Ophelia.
Next up on page 340 is The Sculptor hardcover by Scott McCloud. This is offered by First Second, and this is the signed bookplate edition. Now, normally, I don't recommend, you know, I don't do picks on something that's like a signed bookplate edition or whatever, because, you know, I'd just, frankly, rather get a cheaper version of it, but I haven't found a cheaper version of this, so I'm going to hedge my bets and say get this. And for anyone who doesn't know who Scott McCloud is, he's the person who wrote Understanding Comics back in 1993, later followed it up with Reinventing Comics in the year 2000, and then finally, well, hopefully not finally, but later, Making Comics in 2006. He has done more work on kind of comic book studies and defining the language of comics, the mechanics of comics, the very concept of comic books as we know it, than probably anyone since Will Eisner, or probably anyone other than Will Eisner. If you haven't read Understanding Comics, it's not a short book, but it's done in comic book format. He has essentially an avatar or character of himself that walks you through it, and it really explains comics in a very interesting and mind-expanding sort of a way. He's actually written, I think, more pages about comics than he may have written pages of comics, because he has done Zot, he did Destroy, which is a great one-shot that I wish they would bring back. He also kind of coined the idea of the 24-hour comics. He's also done, I think, The New Adventures of Abraham Lincoln a couple of years back. Actually, that's probably about 15 years ago now. And now he's coming out with The Sculptor. So seeing a really talented guy working his craft as a comic book creator, writer, artist, etc., well worth doing. I don't think you'll be disappointed. And the very concept here is we've got a guy who is a sculptor. He gets his childhood wish of being able to sculpt anything he can imagine, but he's only got 200 days left to live. So what does he do with that gift in that time frame? And this is a 496-page hardcover that's 6 inches by 9 inches, so a little bit smaller format or whatever, but again, just shy of 500 pages for $29.99, and it's a signed bookplate edition. They're limiting it to 1,500 copies. Now, again, presumably they're going to have something that's got a bigger print run and such, but I don't see any sign of that at the moment. That having been said, you know, it's, again, well worth doing. It is a mature themes tag, so we may see some nudity. He's going to be sculpting, so, you know, maybe a female figure. Based on the cover, it looks like he's trying to sculpt the love of his life. So that's, again, interesting concept, and just watching the execution of it, I think, is going to be educational, informative, and very entertaining. Now, we do have a 45% discount through DCBS on this. Discounts are usually lower in the back half, just because a lot of these publishers can't offer the same level of discounts as the premier publishers. But DCBS is trying to pass as much of the savings on to us as they can, and that's going to take that $30 price tag down again, 45%, which is pretty good. And again, it's almost 500 pages of comic in two colors and such. So I really do not think you can go wrong on this. I know that the price tag, even with the 45% discount, is not minimal, but this is something I think well worth checking out. This is the sort of thing that has a high possibility of getting an Eisner Award next year at Comic-Con. So, once again, that's the Sculptor hardcover, signed bookplate edition by Scott McCloud, offered by First Second. It's on page 340 of the previews catalog. It's, again, got that initial cover price of $29.99. We do have that discount through DCBS for 45%, which will drop that price down to $16.49, which, again, nearly 500 pages, well worth doing. So, check it out.
This is Derek once again from the Comics Alternative podcast, and my last pick of the month you'll find on page 351 of the October catalog. It's in the NBM section. Rick Geary's A Treasury of Victorian Murder Compendium 2. This is a hardcover. Now, this includes the previously published works: The Borden Tragedy, The Mystery of Mary Rogers, The Saga of the Bloody Benders, The Case of Melanie Smith, Melindine Smith, and The Murder of Abraham Lincoln. 400 pages of real murder cases from the Victorian era. This second handsomely quarter-bound omnibus volume brings together the famous double axe murder of Lizzie Borden, the drowning of the lovely Mary Rogers in New York City's harbor, the Benders who summarily offed their inn customers in the Wild West, Madeline Smith poisoning an inconvenient suitor, and the assassination of President Lincoln. If you're not familiar with the work of Rick Geary and you're a fan of crime and murder mysteries, whether they be in the Victorian era or otherwise, you definitely should check out this compendium. Last year, Geary came out with the first compendium, and we even had Rick on the Comics Alternative podcast and interviewed him about that. He really has a love for the Victorian period, and he also has a penchant for murder mysteries. So his work over the past several years has been to bring those two loves together in their very, very good comics. They're in black and white. He tells a good story. And these are actual murders themselves. So what he does is he takes the history and he weaves it into a very engaging comics narrative. And this one, you can't beat. You got to get A Treasury of Victorian Murder Compendium 2. And if you really like it, go back and get last year's Treasury of Victorian Murder Compendium 1. Thanks a lot for letting me share my recommendations for this month. And now, let's see who's next.
Hey guys, TJ here with my next selection, and it's in the Rebellion 2000 AD section on page 362. This is Brass Sun, The Wheel of Worlds hardcover, with writing by Ian Eddington and art by I.N.J. Culbard. And this is a series that I first kind of came onto because I subscribed to 2000 AD, the weekly book that they put out digitally. And it just kind of really sparked my interest. You know, I'm a pretty big sci-fi fan, and I like stuff set in space. And I just really like I.N.J. Culbert's art. And this was something that they then put out in single issues, I think. I think they're actually still putting it out right now. I think 5 or 6 issues. And so I think this is the first collection of that. They've actually gone on to do more stories in the further progs of 2000 AD. So be on the lookout for more Brass Sun in the future. But the description is, the Ori is a fully functional life-size clockwork solar system, a clutch of planets orbiting a vast brass sun via immense metal spars. But the once unified collection of worlds has regressed into eccentric fiefdoms, and ice is encroaching on the planets as the sun is dying. Ren and Eponymous must find the key to restart the sun, but first must escape the world known as the Keep, collecting the acclaimed miniseries from the artist of New Deadwardians and the writer of Stickleback. This is just a pretty inventive series with great art. If you're interested in a sci-fi fantasy adventure series and you're a pretty big fan of 2000 AD or the way they tell stories, Rebellion usually does a good job with their hardcovers. So if you're looking at that, the only question I have is that in the listing it says black and white, but I distinctly remember the stories being color. So I think that's a misprint here, but just be sure to check that out on their webpage before you buy it if you're not interested in a black and white. But it's a great story, so check out Brass Sun on page 362.
Next up, on page 363 and 4, is basically four comics from Red Giant Entertainment. Now, I want to start by thanking Jason Kim for mentioning the Giant Size Fantasy number 1 last month. That had completely fallen under my radar. Now, I wound up going all in on all four. And this month, Red Giant has the second issue of all of these. Now, they did zero issues, I believe, as part of Free Comic Book Day. And as luck would have it, I'm recording this on Sunday morning. I'm a little behind the game on getting this episode together, but and doing my own clips. Bad, bad John. Anyways, the advantage of that is I happened to talk with the chief operations officer over at Red Giant Entertainment. He was at Wizard World Austin, and I'm just walking around, saw his table. It's like, ooh, I want to ask about these things. Had a great conversation with him. And they did, like I said, the zero issues is part of Free Comic Book Day. They are offering these as close to free as they can to retailers. And just really what they're doing is the goal here is an outreach campaign for comics. They are teaming up with Toys R Us, and I'm not sure the rollout plan or when this is going to go into effect or exactly all the mechanics yet. And I'll see if I can get David on to talk about this in more detail and more accurately than my recollection. But if you go buy a video game at Toys R Us, you get it, you get the bag, you walk out, and in the bag is going to be a bunch of these comics. So the goal is to get more people reading comics. He remembers the good old days when if something sold under a quarter million units, it was canceled because it wasn't worth publishing for Marvel and DC and the other people. And these days, it takes two or three top-selling comics, to get to that level. And he's like, that's just not right. And I totally agree with him. And they've got some very good creators, solid creators, on these different books of Giant Size Action, Giant Size Adventure, Giant Size Fantasy, and Giant Size Thrills that, you know, are time-tested people who've worked over at Marvel and DC and other places. So it's not like it's just some people off the street or whatever. They're trying to hit different genres. They're trying to hit different art styles and whatnot, and just trying to get something that everybody should be able to find something in this that they like. And I really applaud the goal. And again, want to thank Jason for getting this on my radar, because I think this is potentially one of the best odds of success I've seen lately of getting comics into more hands. Digital comics is great, but a publisher that's actively saying, here, read this. We think it's good. We've published it, and just read it, you know, to no cost to the end consumer for the most part. Now, the mechanics of this is obviously they've got to get, you know, print copies out to people and whatnot. And the way different stores handle it is going to be a little bit different. Because the idea isn't just, hey, let's go get it into everybody's sub, you know, that's got a pull list or orders through DCBS or whatever. We're the choir. That we need to be evangelizing this, not abusing this, if you will. We should be using this as getting our friends and other people who are not into comics but are potential readers. This is like a no-risk way for them. And the idea is stores would have copies at their store, and just every week you could go in and, you know, pick up whatever the free one is. The ad on page 363 is basically supplies are limited, only available each week as supplies last. Ask your retailer for details and be sure they order plenty. And again, it's for walk-in traffic and trying to build up an audience for comics. And we need to help them do this and support them in this. Now, with DCBS, we're doing this mail order. So on their order form, they've got it, I think, at $1 each, which 72 pages for $1, that's still a bargain. And they've got to order in batches of 50 or whatever. So I don't know all the mechanics and on the retailer side of things. But if this allows DCBS to basically be stocking up and hitting a lot of their local people or otherwise use this as some sort of a comic book outreach program, that's awesome. That's the entire goal. Even if you put all of that aside, we're still getting 72 pages, two stories. You know, it's a flip book format. Every issue of these things right now for the buck through DCBS. What your specific retailer is going to do, I have no idea if you're doing a local one. And, you know, they may have to pay shipping on this. They may not. I don't know all the mechanics of that. And not all retailers are going to invest heavily in this. And we need to encourage them to and take leverage this and take this opportunity to, again, get comics into more hands. Because if people decide, hey, I like First Daughter or Dual Identity or Pandora's Blog or Monster Isle or Wayward Sons or Tesla or Amped or Magicka, which are the different properties in these four titles, they go to the comic shop or they order through DCBS or whatever, and they get some other stuff as well. And it's a virtuous cycle that uplifts all comics. This is a publisher that has really gotten on my radar as a result of this. And again, thank you, Jason, for pointing this out. And as somebody who monitors the sales figures, I really want these guys to be successful. I had a great conversation with David at the Wizard World Austin convention, and I'll see if I can get him on the show at some point just to talk about what they're doing, how they're doing it, why they're doing it, because somebody who's actually thinking, you know, we got to reach outside the people who are already getting comics and doing it really proactively, this is a great opportunity. So, once again, that's Red Giant Entertainment, Giant Size Adventure, Giant Size Action, Giant Size Fantasy, Giant Size Thrills, second issue of all of those. If you want to get any of these from your local shop, make sure they know that. If you want to get them through DCBS, they're on the order form. So, check them out. Next up on page 380 is the Valiant number 1 of 4 from Valiant Entertainment. This is written by Jeff Lemire, Matt Kent, and we got art by Paulo Rivera. This is a 4-issue miniseries event in a prestige format, so I guess square bound, which not really excited about that myself, but looking forward to this nonetheless. And it is an entirely self-contained, new reader-friendly event spotlighting Bloodshot, Eternal Warrior, Geomancer, and a bunch of the other characters from across the Valiant universe. Basically, the Immortal Enemy is back. The Eternal Warrior is ready to fight him, and he's got a lot of friends with him. So I'm looking forward to this, just in terms of I'm liking what Valiant's doing. Jeff Lemire is writing some great stuff. Matt Kent also. The two of them are co-writing this, I guess. And we've got 4 pages of art, no dialogue or anything, on page 381. Then on page 382 and 383, we've got a full-size double-page spread of Bloodshot fighting someone and whatnot. So really great way to show off the art and stuff by Paulo Rivera. And again, 32 pages, full color, $3.99, 4 issues, so it's not like you're getting in too deep. They say it's self-contained. I believe them. We've got a 50% discount through DCBS on this. So again, that gets it down to about the $1.99, $2 price point. If you're looking forward to this at your local store, make sure they know so they can order enough copies. Valiant is doing some great stuff just in general, and a self-contained event where you can kind of go in, sample the characters, see what's interesting, and then, you know, spin out to one of their individual titles if you like them. Well worth taking advantage of that opportunity. So, once again, that's the Valiant number 1 of 4 from Valiant Entertainment on page 380. Check it out.
Hey guys, TJ here with my last selection this month. It's in the Viz Media section on page 391. It's Master Keaton, volume 1 by Naoki Urasawa. You know, I'm just a huge Naoki Urasawa fan. His 20th Century Boys, Monster, Pluto, just some great manga, some of the best manga I've ever read. And he's just known so well for his exquisite pacing and his cliffhangers and just leaving you on edge of your seat with his stories and, you know, his ability to misdirect you and make you think one thing's happening. And then just the way he brings his stories together over long volumes. It's just he's one of the best storytellers I've ever had the pleasure of reading. And so this is, they're bringing over another one of his series, Master Keaton. And this is the first volume, so if you want to get in on the ground floor, this is where you want to do it. And it says, Taichi Hiroya Keaton, the son of a Japanese zoologist and English noblewoman, is an insurance investigator known for his successful and unorthodox method of investigation. Educated in archaeology and a former member of the SAS, Master Keaton uses his knowledge and combat training to uncover buried secrets, thwart would-be villains, and pursue the truth. So, You know, one of the keys of Nuki Urasawa's is that, you know, the stories have multiple levels. And, you know, as you're going through the manga, you're keeping track of two or three different stories. And it just really pays off. I've never been let down by reading one of his series. I've loved all of his work. So if you're interested in some new Urasawa work, check out page 391 of the Viz section and have a good month, guys.
Aloha, this is Jason from Hawaii. To all the Hawaii comic book podcast listeners, I just wanted to let everyone know that there's another comic book store out on the leeward side of Oahu. The store is located in the Kapolei Marketplace. The store is called Westside Comics and Games. The store has been out there for about a year now. The store has a limited selection of comics over there. They do not have any back issues over there. And they have a large selection of role-playing games, such as Warhammer 40K and Star Trek Attack Wing. And recently, they became an authorized CGC, or the Certified Guaranteed Company drop-off location. So, you know, any Hawaii resident, you know, wants to have their that CGC grading, the numbers rating, you know, like from 1 to 10, they can bring their comics to Westside Comics and Games. And what the store will do, they'll do the packaging and shipping the comics to the company on the mainland, where the CGC company on the mainland will do the comic book rating up there. But please note that there is a service fee, postage and postage insurance fee that the customer has to pay. And also, just to clarify, Westside Comics, they do not do the CGC grading. All they just do is they do the packaging and shipping. They'll send it to the main company on the mainland, and the company will do the grading up there. If you have any further questions about pricing or, you know, what's the process and so forth, give Julius Idano, he's the store owner, a call. And the store number, it's area code 808-674-2866. Again, area code 808-674-2866. If you guys get a chance, give Julius a call. And if you guys get a chance to check out his store too. The staff is very friendly. They're very helpful out there. And Julius, you know, he's a nice guy. He's, you know, I've talked to him on a number of occasions. You know, this guy is a comic book collector. You know, in his private collection, you know, he's got, you know, he's a big Avengers, you know, guy. So he's got all the Avengers issues in his private collection. So this guy knows his comics. So again, if you guys get a chance, go out there, check out the store, you know, yeah, just go ahead and check it out. And, you know, I just want to say thank you, John, for letting me, you know, be able to promote, you know, one of Hawaii's local comic stores on the podcast. Again, thank you very much. Until next month, aloha.
This is one of those months where I've got a number of things after my kind of initial pass through the order form as still, do I want to get them? Do I not want to get them? What about the items I've been sampling lately? You know, do I get on G.I. Joe? Do I not? Stuff like that. So I've got quite a few things like that. And what's interesting is my total right now, after discount shipping and all of that, is $587 and some odd cents. And that, I think, does not include the artist edition that IDW has this month that I would like to get, but yeah, that John Romita Jr. Or that John Romita Amazing Spider-Man Artifact Edition. You know, it's just a matter of balancing how much I have time to read and acquire and whatnot, how much space I've got, because that's starting to fill up, and, you know, what I want to get and stuff. So I find these episodes really helpful just to get more input and stuff like that. It sometimes puts things on my list, sometimes takes stuff off the list. And at this point, again, I'm kind of balancing how much do I put on versus how much do I take off. Because I have, the breakdown this time around, 4 items from Dark Horse, so not much there. 88 from DC, 3 from IDW, 14 from Image, 74 from Marvel, and 32 from the back half. And that's stuff that at this point is actually on my order. And there are a few things that, again, may come and go, depending on some final decisions and whatnot. So that's like 215 items. So that's part of why I'm thinking, am I getting more than I can read? Because, I mean, it's fun to read all this, but between that, the podcast, work, and, you know, other things, it keeps things busy for me. So, all of that having been said, I hope you guys found stuff that you were interested this time around. We had a lot of great submissions. Once again, got them early, and I really appreciate having those early this time around because it allowed me to do a lot of the prep work before actually sitting down to assemble the episode. I'm recording this part of it, having assembled everything but this part of the episode, on Saturday. It's actually closing in on 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and I've been kind of bouncing between this and crunching the numbers, which came out Friday morning. So having been able to get a lot of the initial stuff done ahead of time really helps. I want to thank everybody for that. And again, great turnout on the number of clips this time. So thanks, Derek, Chris, Drew, Ian, Jason, TG, and the guys over at Comics for Fun and Profit for sending in clips. We have an open submission policy, so as you see the online solicits going up, as you get previews next time around, if you see something that looks really cool to you, send in a clip. It just takes a few minutes to do. It spreads the word, and that helps everybody. Now, the DCBS order form for this previews is due on October 22nd for local comic shops. I think they need to have their orders into Diamond, or your orders into them, I guess, by the 18th. I could be wrong on that. Check with your local store. And again, part of the reason for doing all of this is to pre-order your comics with your local store or whoever you get it through, DCBS or your local store, whatever. And that way they can order what they need. Anytime they order kind of not knowing if somebody's going to buy it or not, that's a risk for the store. And particularly for local stores, the more information we can give them, the more we can help them out, the better their profit margin is, or, you know, their break even, depending, you know, but the better off they are. So hopefully they appreciate that. If your local store has a pull and hold service, take advantage of that. Use that. It helps you out. It helps the store out. It helps the publishers, the creators, everybody. And that's part of why I do these episodes, is to promote the books when the orders need to be placed. Because promoting a book the day it's on the rack, it's like, well, either it got there in enough copies or it didn't, at which point it's a little too late to go change that. So, again, hopefully you found stuff. The next previews should get released on October 29th. By the week before that, there should be online solicits, and maybe even the week before that, actually. So a lot of information available to do these clips. If you need more, whatever, post on the forum, let me know, and I'll see what I can do to help. Next deadline, I think, is going to wind up being then Saturday, November 8th. That's, again, bright and early on the Saturday. That is another one where it's going to overlap with the number crunching weekend for me. So if you can get the stuff in early, I appreciate it. At the very least, post on the forum so I know what to expect and can kind of budget my time accordingly. So, like I said, hopefully everybody found some stuff this month that they liked, and please send in clips next time. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.